This podcast is proud to be part of the TalkSport Fan Network. TalkSport. Powered by fans.
Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
The TalkSport Fan Network is proudly supported by McDelivery, bringing you the food you love. McDelivery brings a top-tier lineup of food right to your door. No matter the result, you'll always be winning with McDelivery. Order now on the McDonald's app and you'll get rewards points delivered too, so that ordering today means some tasty rewards for tomorrow. Only via app at participating restaurants. 18 plus rewards registration required. Points only on menu items, delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com.
The game was thrown away in the first half with as poor a performance as it was against Watford in the first game of the season. Not very often I can say my team gets dominated physically, but they dominated us physically in the first half of the game today, and not acceptable. Players were told that.
Welcome to the My Old Man Said podcast. I'm David Michael, the editor of myoldmansaid.com. Joining me to discuss Aston Villa being swatted away at the Emirates, Mr. Phil Shaw and Mr. Chris Budd. Welcome, gentlemen. This is a rare show where we do it in daylight.
Yeah. Hello.
It's not what we do in the shadows anymore. It's what we do in the daylight.
We've been exposed. When I say we, I mean Aston Villa. The only worrying thing is the last time we gave away a two-goal lead really cheaply, it seemed to derail the whole season. So I hope the Arsenal evidence isn't the first happening after the Wolves debacle. If you remember, I'm referring to a certain Leicester game where Grealish, was that his first goal?
Yeah, Carlos Gil scored a worldie as well, didn't he, that day?
Yeah, Carlos Gil.
Never to be seen again.
He's resurfaced. He's been reincarnated as Buendia. But yeah, we were thinking happy days. Here we go. This old Carlos Gil has scored. Grealish is on the mark. This is going to be a good season to us. Leicester were thinking, oh, we're fucked again this season. Another relegation battle. That game was pivotal. They won the league. We got relegated.
Talk about sliding doors.
Yeah, We'll get into the game later on. I mean, first of all, we will get through the latest Villa news, which is quite a eclectic selection, before tackling the 3 points media muppets and then getting into what went down in the Emirates. How are you guys anyway, before we tuck into it?
Not bad. Busy, back on the road, but it's good.
Anything, where were you? Were you in the Brum yesterday?
I was over towards Wolverhampton last night. Which is all right. It was okay. Back in Brum next weekend, though. Halloween weekend and all that, so it's going to be a busy one.
Bud just likes to go trick and treating. that's why it's going to be a busy one. Feel sure what's going on in your life. Not that we care.
No, just...
We do, just, really. That's why we ask.
You're just jealous of my spend local credit card that arrived.
I really am.
Yeah, I'm fighting my way through the traffic of everybody in the country suddenly being given £100 and a time limit to use it. So everybody just run into the shops.
What is your time limit?
It's like 3 weeks.
Ooh, is this to kickstart the economy?
So yeah, it's one of these prepaid, like MasterCard type things.
Yeah, that's it. You're not allowed to use it online. You have to actually go into a shop and use it, so, which is what everybody's doing at the minute.
Can you spend it on booze?
Is it a way of just spreading COVID? Is that what they're trying to do?
Yeah, that's it. This is a way to solve the Brexit problems. Just wipe us out. Just get them to go out and spend £100. That's it.
Investment.
But there'd be nobody to pick fruit in the fields.
Potatoes. Come on, get it right.
Yeah, no, I was going to say that, but I didn't want to get done for casual racism. but no, that alludes to a headline. What are they paying per hour? Is it £30?
It's up to 30. You can earn up to £30 an hour, yeah.
Yeah, farmers say nobody in the UK wants to do that job. And obviously, because the EU has been shut out now, there's no Brexit's working marvellously at the moment. Right, let's get some news in the bag. Do you want to speak about city regions to get £6.9 billion for public transport or the latest Villa news?
Reluctantly, the Villa news.
Oh, we could go on about local transport, regeneration of the North and the Midlands, but
connectivity and all that, unlike Villa's midfield. Yeah.
Villa news it is. First, cab off the rank. There's a few things. I mean, I mentioned these in the Patreon-only podcast off the record. The first thing being people may have seen mutterings on social media about shenanigans going down in Aston Park, which to the uninitiated, it's the park where Aston Hall is behind the Trinity Road stand. There's been reports, and these reports have gone to the police, of people firing rockets at Villa fans. Fireworks, basically, and then being seen with knives. I've spoken to the West Midlands police about this, and it turns out that this has happened the last couple of games at Villa Park, and it all stems from an incident, I think pre-match, where earlier on in the season, where a Villa fan, I think, just got into some kind of kerfuffle with some local youths and decked one of them. So it looks like it's a bit of a revenge, and it's like a youth gang type of revenge. And I don't know if it's on, they're looking for this particular Villa fan and his mates, or it's just against Villa fans per se. But there's actually been sightings of machetes and knives. So this is something the police are taking seriously and looking into for the West Ham game. And, you know, they've detailed some strategy, which I'm not going to say on air, but if you walk that way to the ground, do stay vigilant. Meanwhile, Witten Arms, I didn't actually know this. I don't know if it's public knowledge or widespread. Witten Arms has been closed, as you may have noticed, or definitely away fans would have noticed, from like Everton onwards. And the reason why is because the owner at the time, after the Brentford game, did a runner with the take-ins, disappeared off into the sunset. And left behind, according to the police, a marijuana factory. So this is what's been going down, yeah, for the away fans.
No wonder the atmosphere's been a bit mellow recently.
that's why Will stayed up.
That's why the Everton fans were so gutted that it was closed when they rocked up before that game. So yes, there's been a bit of a saga there at the Witten Arms. Other news seems that, as some fans may have seen, but you know, we didn't see any of the spot checks for vaccinations and also negative tests. I mean, as anybody who's checked the government map on COVID cases, I mean, it's just gone off the hook again. On the colour scale of white, meaning no or very little cases in your area, to I think it goes yellow, green, blue, and then purple. If you look at the map now, that you know shows you the amount of cases across the country, it's everywhere is just purple now. It's just widespread. So this is why they're bringing in these spot checks, to get people ready for if and it seems likely, in my opinion, that they would start to have more checks on match days, which is completely fair enough. But anyway, one idea to speed up the flow is, once, you know, season tickets holders could potentially email in their vaccination records, or once they've shown them, receive some kind of sticker to stick on their season card. So then, for example, if you've got 20,000 double vaxxed season ticket holders, then that's, and they've all got a sticker on their card, that's going to speed up the process, isn't it? If they just have to flash their season card at, rather than going through your app and all that kind of stuff.
Seems like a kind of a logical way
to do it. That's one potential thing on the horizon there. Meanwhile, there's been another, I think it was Greg Evans that in his article announced that the season ticket waiting list is now 20,500, which seemed a bit odd to me based on previous announcements, considering that Dean Smith the week before had declared it was 18,000. The first fan consultation group meeting, I think in the summer, it was 13,000. And then I think Smith in the next day said it was 15,000. So there's a massive discrepancy. I mean, I double-checked with a club and they did say that's the figure they gave them, although that does include people who have had two chances to get a season ticket and they've said no on both accounts. So it's the third time they'll get asked. If they don't take it, then they're out. So in terms of actual reality of people who are really actively after season ticket holders, it's going to be a lot less than 20,000, that's for sure. And also, I'm quite interested to know how they're collating this. Surely 20,000 people have not requested to be on that list. I mean, is it if they mention they're interested in a phone call, do they get logged? You know, if they click something on the website, do they get logged? Or is this directly people subscribing to that list?
Has it come through the Socios app?
Yeah. But it seems to be going up by thousands.
Every time we lose, it seems to double.
Every time we lose, it hasn't been the greatest of starts. So to get a jump of an extra 7,000, I mean, probably after the Arsenal game, it's probably gone up to 40,000.
At least.
If I was doing the press conference, I'd be the first question before the West Ham game. So, Dean, what's the waiting list like now? Season ticket waiting list now? Oh, it's 45,000 at the moment. Meanwhile, on the pitch, the under-23s lost 3-2 to Sunderland at home after being in the lead. Villa DNA in full effect. We were talking about a few podcasts ago about the ethos of, you know, the youth team should be playing exactly the same way as the first team does, and it seems to be in full effect. And anybody, if you haven't seen the news over the last week of the new fixture changes, which were a bit delayed, and I know the Football Supporters Association weren't too happy that the Premier League had kind of reneged on the promise of the notice they would give fans. The highlight really is the Manchester City game. If you don't know, has been finally announced, the home game December the 1st on the Wednesday, which will be on Amazon Prime at 8:15. And that adds to the December fixture list, and we have 7 games now in that month. Right, let's move on. It's time for Media Muppets. So, Phil, what's in the Media Muppet trough this week?
Well, after a few weeks of trying to stay away from the Birmingham Mail, unfortunately, I've had to go back to it because it's just a factory that keeps on delivering the goods. So I've actually given them a top three this week. So we have three belters coming in. So we'll just run through them quick. The first one, Jack Grealish responds after Steve Bruce is sacked by Newcastle, was the headline.
Yeah, I saw that headline. I just ignored it. I knew it involved an emoji. Was it an emoji?
Of course it was an emoji. Clap and hand emoji to Alan St. Maximin's post about saying how good a man Steve Bruce was. Although in Match Club, Dale came up with a much better headline. He says, Steve Bruce gets the clap from an unlikely source. Coming in at number two, Aston Villa should be banging on Manchester United's door after Gary Neville's comments. Well, the comment was about Donny van der Beek. All Gary Neville said was, I think he needs to go and play football somewhere else. Doesn't narrow it down to Villa. And the last time I looked, Gary Neville wasn't on the wage bill at United that could make these sporting decisions. So we'll just ignore that.
That is maximum tenuousness, isn't it?
It is. But then my personal favourite one was this headline. Former Aston Villa target tipped to finally replace Steve Bruce after Newcastle United sacking. Like, I was thinking, target Birmingham Mail. They can't have went for Milo Rashica. He's still playing. He can't just jump into managing. But no, it was apparently it was Paulo Fonseca. The line was, Fonseca has always wanted to coach in England, and there were suggestions that he was in Villa's lists of targets to replace Bruce when he was sacked in 2018. And they've even linked back to their old article. So
okay, now they are literally trying to get you to click just by mentioning Aston Villa in the headline. Anyway, they could ship it in there.
Yeah, so they've made new clickbait out of their old 3-year-old clickbait. I mean, that's top tier. That's they've really excelled themselves this week with those three.
I mean, it's scandalous, isn't it? I mean, the whole idea of I think somebody related it to advertising standards. I think that, you know, some of this shit should be illegal because it's really taken the piss out of people. I mean, you know, you understand how it works, but to me, it's just on one hand they're all trying to be pally on social media, while on the other hand they're just abusing supporters and just taking them for a ride. And that's what pisses me off.
Oh, but we've all got bills to pay.
It's just unethical, if you ask me. It's that two-facedness I don't like about it. Right, moving on to 3 points. The three faces of the week. Premier League aren't happy about this Newcastle situation, as we know, and they have actually voted to temporarily block Newcastle owners from making lucrative sponsorship deals. And that's basically working the books, isn't it, a la Manchester City?
You basically sponsor yourself.
Yeah. Sponsor yourself for a massive fee to balance the books to help you work on that financial fair play to free up the money in the books, at least, to splash the cash. So in terms of the vote, I think 18 clubs voted for this temporary block, including Aston Villa. Newcastle obviously voted against it, and Manchester City abstained. I thought that was quite funny. They're like, hey, oh shit, yeah, we dodged that bullet, didn't we? So we'll see how that one rolls out. But I mean, the fit and proper test is a joke, where the Premier League, they had two issues. One was you're not allowed to be owned by a state directly. The other one was they weren't happy about the old pirating of Premier League streams. And the Saudis said, oh, yeah, we sorted out the piracy issue. And they were like, they've given us documents to show that they're not connected to, the Saudi state. It's the fucking Saudi public fund, isn't it?
It's the Crown Prince's fund.
It's a big joke.
Unfortunately, the Premier League doesn't really have a leg to stand on morally, and the top six who are really trying to push obviously the Newcastle thing out the door is kind of like, well, they don't have a leg to stand on either with the whole Super League stance. So it's kind of like the whole thing's just morally bankrupt. This is just, as we said in the previous pod, this is like Man City on steroids.
Yeah, the whole thing's going to implode football. I mean, we've said that from day dot on this bloody podcast. We're just watching it burn, aren't we? That's all we're doing nowadays.
Yeah. Yeah.
Point number two, FIFA is planning to crack down on agents being allowed to represent both the player and a club in deals, in a move that will see intermediaries lose out on tens of millions of pounds. Wolves. Mendes.
They're proposing a deal to, obviously, you know, to ban dual representation on any deal where the player earns over 200,000 a year, which essentially would fuck every Premier League team, you would think.
Yeah.
Like maybe youth team players. Obviously, the leading agents in Europe are up in arms about this one, and they're planning to sort of take the nuclear option legally.
I think it's just from the pressure of, like, the government. There's, you know, the Tracy Crouch government fan-led review of football. So there's certain parties are trying to get their ducks in order to not, you know, look so bad.
Yeah, but basically it's part of some of the sort of the research that had come out where four out of five of around 800 intermediary transactions saw the agent representing the club, the player, and others sometimes. You know, probably the best example that was used was the Paul Pogba deal where...
Is this a big tax avoidance? Is this...
Yeah, there's a little bit of that. That'll come later. Pogba was obviously represented by Mino Raiola, who represented Man United, Pogba and Juventus. So he had an end on all of the deal. And as you said about money going out in the football, last season Premier League clubs paid $272 million out. So that's $272 million that is not going into the pyramid, as they call it.
And trickling down to the lower leagues.
No trickle down. It's just going to agents. And they can do obviously what they want with that money. There is no reinvestment. That's $272 million that grassroots doesn't see, etc. So they want it capped, to cap commissions at 10% of a transfer fee. Some of that, as you previously said, is driven by HMRC guidelines, where there's kind of like this 50-50 reciprocal thing where the tax gets split between the club and the player, and that will no doubt end up changing as well. So it's basically like not allowing the agents to have no liability in any of these deals, basically.
Yeah. Final point number three. This could have been the score at the Emirates. Peterborough Rangers won 40-0 in the 16th tier of English football.
That really is a cricket score, isn't it?
Why is that significant, Phil Shaw?
The reason that I picked this out as being significant was because the top scorer on the team was the player manager of Peterborough Rangers, Dwayne Rankin, scored 13 goals. So, and worse than that, the poor opposition team, Sodri, they only had 8 players. So I'm thinking, here's the Peterborough Rangers player manager, Dwayne Rankin. You know, he's talking about flat track bully. He's just like, first of all, he's leaving himself on the pitch to score those 13 goals instead of bringing on like a youth player or something like that, or even lending the other team a couple of players to make it an even game. And then he's given interviews afterwards, and the interview he gave to BBC Radio Cambridge was, it does seem a bit harsh, but that's football. You've got to score as many as you can score. That's the aim of the game. Not talk about Miller mentality. That's next level.
I like his mentality. Never mind a set piece coach at Villa. We need a winning coach, a coach that teaches you how to win.
Frankly, a coach who can score 13 goals in a game would be good.
Bring him on. Before we go on with the show, I just want to say a thank you to Penfold for supporting this episode. Penfold is a flexible pension that's easy to set up and effortless to use. If you are self-employed or haven't got a pension, then it's definitely worth checking into. The full flexibility allows you to change the amount you put in. If you want to do it monthly, you can put it on ICE. Also, you get access to the government 25% bonus on everything you put in, as well as the interest that will compound from whichever investment fund you select. There's a choice of six, and I think level four, which is the higher risk, is actually been one of the top performing pension plans over the last 5 years. It's very easy to do. I actually have one myself. That's why I actually approached Penfold to sponsor the podcast as another entity to help listeners with their finances. Of course, pensions, as with all investments, your capital is at risk and the value of what you put in may go up as well as down. But as a listener of the My Old Man Said podcast, you will get a £50 bonus if you go to getpenfold.com/moms. So check it out. And as I said, it literally just take 5 minutes to set up and you can run it from your mobile phone.
Normally being a little extra can be a bit much, but when it comes to healthcare, it pays to be extra. And United Healthcare makes it easy with Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they supplement your primary plan, helping you manage out-of-pocket costs without the usual requirements and restrictions like deductibles and enrollment periods. So when it comes to covering your medical bills, you can feel good about being a little extra. Visit uh1.com to find the Health Protector Guard plan for you.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Picture the scene. All of your mates around, you've got your McNugget share boxes ready to go. Partner this with your team playing champagne football. Perfect. Order McDelivery now on the McDonald's app. There's nothing quite like a McDelivery. At participating restaurants, 18 plus, serving times, delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com.
All right then, let's get into Aston Villa's latest trip to the Emirates. Villa were going there, trying to make it four league wins on the trot against Arsenal, which is not something...
Four clean sheets as well.
Not something we're accustomed to be saying. This would be a rare occurrence. But now, rather than looking at these massive positives and having a wonderful run like that, we're now looking at stats that, like, it's our third defeat on the trot. And we're now looking at even at the doomsday scenario, as we just said the last time we significantly lost a game after being 2-0 up. We ended up relegated. And I think
in the Premier League, anyway.
Yeah, in the Premier League. And this Emirates game was... let's have a clickbait vibe. This was evidence of that as being a potential outcome to this season. Because, I mean, we look back over the game before we recorded the show just to... we wanted to look in detail in terms of the defensive calamities. And you couldn't really pick anybody out. It was everybody.
Yeah.
It was collectively shit.
Oh, it was absolutely shambolic.
Yeah. Where do you start? Do you go from the first minute where Ollie Watkins sort of lost his head and, you know, and on a different day a referee might have tried to make a name for himself and send him off in the first minute? Or do you just go from, like, the next attack and Arsenal just piling forward at every opportunity? I mean, you just didn't know what was going on.
Yeah, well, I mean, the starting point was, I mean, after the game, Smith did say he warned the players that Arsenal would come out fast and furious. Now, they didn't look like they were prepared for that at all, because we were harassed, bullied. This is by Arsenal, by the way. Outthought, they were just at a different level. And before we get into the details of what happened, it was almost like they came out and Arteta had said, right, let's win this game in the first 20 minutes, which, you know, there's been versions of Villa that used to come out fast and the first half was better than the second half, and we've kind of reverted, turned that on its head. But when we were getting to the 40th minute mark, I mean, before that, Arsenal seemed to have run out of a bit of steam. And I was thinking, oh, this is like the, I think I said in Match Club, this is like the Muhammad Ali, George Foreman fight where we're now rope-a-doping them and they've burnt themselves out. And luckily, we're only 1-0 down. So I was about to go into half-time with a little bit of optimism. And, of course, that penalty VAR incident happened, and it was like, oh, we're fucked.
Yeah.
That was the last flicker of hope extinguished. I mean, before they scored, the writing was on the wall, wasn't it?
Yeah, they saw our back three. We're not going to say back five, because they didn't see Target and Cash really anywhere in defensive
positions.
In
our own half.
Yeah. So they just knew our back three was there to be got at, because this is the thing. I mean, there was such a fuss made of Villa beating United with the back three. And then there was an international break. Wolves and Arsenal have just went, all right, if Villa are going to play that back three, we'll take a day in training to devote how to destroy it. And that's what both of them have managed to do in different sort of time periods and games.
Because they know those fullbacks, they get caught. You know, you watch it back and, you know, watching it through the game, they're just getting caught every time. And Arsenal have got, you know, they know how to counterattack. It's in their DNA. But, you know, the first one where they hit the post after, like, Mings, he gets his head to the ball from the free kick, but he basically diverts it into danger, doesn't he? Then Partey hits the post, perhaps should have scored. That was the first warning sign. And then the first one's from the corner, is it not?
Yeah, it's a near post flick on where Mings and McGinn decide it's a good idea to duck under the ball.
And the weird thing is, you've got Ings defending against two of their guys on the near post, and they were aiming it at the near post all the time. It's almost like they knew how Villa were going to line up, and they thought, right, there's nobody on that near post of any stature, just get it there.
Yeah, that's exactly it. I mean, why is Danny Ings the one that's going to meet that ball at the near post? I mean, when you have a striker back in the box, I mean, you can understand it when it's like a Wesley, or you said last week you compared it like to Drogba. He was useful back in the box. Ings at the near post, or to meet the first ball into the near post, it's like a key position. I mean, I don't think he's got that big a spring or anything else, not noticeably. So it's,
yeah,
just,
because if you're attacking, you always have one of your centre-backs running the near post. I mean, if you remember that Courtney Horse goal, you know, where he said, oh, he took over Mings's role, because that is the set position. So if that's what the attack's doing, if it's traditional to send a centre-back to run to the near post, why is like a short-ass attacker defending that? It makes no sense. And then, you know, you've got the Mings and McGinn. McGinn's the main culprit in terms of ducking out of it. If Martinez gets a hand to it, for example, and makes a save, Lacazette's goal side of Cash. Cash is like, I don't know what the hell he's doing. Should be goal-side of Lacazette. Cons is like a fart in the trance, doesn't know what's happening, not impacting the play, marking anybody, just in the dead zone again, like he was against Wolves for their second. And you scratch your head, because one of the benefits of playing three at the back that we highlighted a few weeks ago was Villa across the board are a shortish team. So this gives you a way of getting in that extra height for set pieces to defend and attack them. And if you've got three centre-backs in there, none of them's defending the near post. You've got Ings on there. You've got Konsa, as I said, just in limbo. It's a recipe for disaster. And it literally is. If you watch it back, pretty much, you know, this game, it's a horror show in terms of defending.
I mean, you go in at half time, as you said, you know, if you'd have gone in at 1-0 down, you've gone, we've probably dodged a bullet there. You go in deservedly 2-0 down. It could have been, well, could and should have been more. You know, Saka misses a chance. And we were obviously highlighting that one as one of the really bad examples of the two fullbacks getting caught, where you see the play developing on the halfway line and you're like, well, the two fullbacks are nowhere to be seen here. But targets tracking his man in Saka. You think, you've just got to keep going. Just follow your man.
This begins halfway inside their half. Target's behind Saka, so he's got a chance to, if he wants to, because, you know, Saka's just watching the play develop, so he's running, but he's not like sprinting full whack at this point. Target's just like watching the play and just casually running behind Saka, makes no attempt to get on level terms with him. And by the time the play's in deep into our half, there's no way he can catch him. And he's not even actually making a fucking attempt to.
No, I don't know really what Target's doing but not making an attempt to. It's almost as if he's expecting one of the centre-backs to come across and bail him out. Maybe that was what happens in the back four, but in the back five, it's just not happening at all.
Yeah, and then on the other side, Konsa fluffs his lines and in they go. And, you know, Cash is nowhere to be seen on that side because those fullbacks are so far up. And, you know, we highlighted this the last couple of weeks. It is a bit scary that this is not a 5-3-2 at all. It is real in the strictest sense, a 3-5-2, because those fullbacks spend more time in the opposition half.
Of which, unfortunately, I don't think at the moment, I don't think they're either good enough or the way we're playing. Teams aren't worried about their fullbacks getting pinned back. I remember like the last game of last season when Chelsea played a back three, but Chilwell, and I can't remember who was he played. It might have been Reece James, wouldn't it? Playing fullback, but they pinned us back. So we were playing, they were like a flat four that day, Villa.
Yeah.
Even if you go to Arsenal and for the first half say, do you know what? We are going to play a five and these guys are going to go when they get a chance, but at least we're going to be solid. It's almost a little bit like we play wing backs, but we're gung ho.
Yeah.
Because it's so wide open in the middle as well.
And, you know, after that, Saka chance, Partey had he had a free header off the corner, didn't he?
Should have scored.
And that was a near post one as well.
That was just Ming switching off.
The lazy media reaction to trying to big up a set-piece coach and saying what a masterstroke getting him in. And that early hype's just turned to shit because, you know, this is the frailty defending the simplest of things, corners. After being pretty successful last season, I mean, you could kick back and smoke a cigar watching us defend corners most of the time last season. But now it's like, Jesus Christ, Arsenal could have been 5-0 up at halftime.
And for two-thirds of last season, you'd have put your house on Villa to close matches out. Or we had that battling ability. We've lost that this season. You know, those games last year I refer to, like, you know, we went to Leicester, backs to the wall, nick the win. Wolves away, backs to the wall, nick the win. Southampton, we did the same. Arsenal was a similar one at Villa Park. Various other games where you thought, actually, we've got it in us. Leeds away, prime example. Didn't play particularly well, but we had it in us to play badly, grind it out, nick a goal, and then you knew that actually, with our back four and keeper, we've got enough to hold most teams at arm's length. And we showed that throughout, even when we were playing pretty badly going forward in that crappy run from February, we still showed we could do it for periods. This season, we're in sort of mid-October. We've had three put past us three times already.
You'll just come back to this probably throughout the whole podcast. This is against Arsenal. I mean, Arsenal aren't a set-piece team. Could you imagine if this is against a team that, like, focused completely on their set pieces? I mean, Wolves do, and you saw what they were able to do in 10 minutes.
Yeah.
I mean, it's scary. Arsenal don't lump the ball into the box. They just put a cross in. It just caused chaos.
No, that was my takeaway from the whole game.
We would have got thumped by Burnley if we played Burnley. Because, yeah, as you say, Arsenal, not known for their set-piece corner onslaughts, and they were getting free headers at near posts every time. Imagine, Burnley must be, like, kicking themselves, so they haven't played Villa sooner than they will.
It was almost like the perfect game for Arsenal. You know, the team had a very difficult result against Palace. They knew they had to win that one. You think, well, who do we want to play right now? Well, Villa are a bit wafer-thin in terms of their playing style. They've got a new system, new person, etc. And, you know, Villa weren't winning the first ball, weren't winning the second ball. I mean, my takeaway from the whole game, regardless of errors, etc., which, you know, these things happen. But you've gone to Arsenal and you've got outfought by Arsenal. That, to me, that's going to blow my mind for weeks, that you can go to a team like Arsenal who have been the epitome of spineless for the last four or five seasons and you've been out-muscled.
I mean, Arteta's turning the ship around, I think, because it's a young, eager side and I think they've got momentum now. So I don't think we should generalise on Arsenal per se, because I think it's a bit of a different beast now. He's demanding more of a fighting team. But at the same time, you know, we should be meeting fire with fire. But let's get to the specifics of the actual penalty decision, which was one of those bizarre things, because the game had carried on after the incident, which we'll get to, and there was the next break in play, and that caused a bit of confusion because certain people thought he'd blown up for half time. And so when it got to the penalty, the perception was, well, the half's ended, so if Martinez saves that, is that the first break in play, so it should be the end of the game. But you don't have an isolated penalty like that, but he wasn't blowing up for the second half. He was blowing up for the VAR decision, wasn't he?
Yeah.
He made hand signals.
It was one whistle. He made it very clear and he pointed over to the screen that that's where he was heading straight away. So you could see it on the TV broadcast that was exactly what was happening. And you sort of had a feeling that it was going to happen because the commentary that we were getting, the punditry, I mean, Carragher, I think, was doing the Sky commentary and he was going like, oh, that's VAR, they're checking it. That's going to be a pen. That's going to be a pen. That's going to be a pen. Like that. It was constant.
If the VAR guys were watching the Sky commentary, they would have gone, oh shit, Carragher's saying it's a pen. We better pull that one back. But the actual incident, I mean, initially, Target goes up and he's on the floor, and this is where this is the modern footballer. He goes for the injury, doesn't he, Target? And he stays down on the ground longer than he should, and then when he reacts to the play, he's trying to tackle while he's sitting on the ground when he actually had time to get up if he wasn't trying to win favour with the, feigning injury.
Yeah, it's more second phase, as Smith calls it. You know, the initial cross comes in, Target jumps through Lacazette and goes flying. You know, sometimes you'd see that given as a foul. Frankly, I think it's bad defending from Target. Ball comes out. Luiz obviously gets his foot to the ball back into the box. It goes into, towards Lacazette. Lacazette gets there first.
Yeah, I mean, he obviously plays for the penalty once he's got touched in it. And so there's certain angles. I mean, like, we watched it back on the Sky highlights and they only show the front-on angle and it looks like a legit penalty. When I was watching it last night, I saw another angle and you think, well, it looks more like he's diving. And it doesn't look like he got the balls. I mean, if that was a court of law, I'd need to see more angles. But yeah. Bottom line is you can understand it given. It's not as if you're like fuming about it.
It's the cliche. You've given the referee a decision to make. Lacazette got his foot to the ball first? Yes, you've come in from behind. It's only going to get given against you. And if that's the other way, would you be fuming if Villa didn't get that given? Yes.
But also, Target, it's almost like doesn't help himself with his starting position there. It just stinks of desperation.
Yeah, I said it was panic stations because if you look at Lacazette, even if Lacazette does get the ball and no tackles put in on him, he's doing nothing with it. I mean, he's completely on his own. He's facing away from goal. It's not as if he's the foot drawn back to take a shot and it's a last ditch effort. It's not. I mean, the situation was under control. Target's swiping at it when he's already on the ground.
Target does not cover himself in glory in this game. But as I said, I thought Arsenal looked like they'd gone down in tempo at that stage, and you're thinking 1-0, this game's still alive, we've got out of jail here big time. But that was it was almost like a reminder, like you actually deserve nothing from this game, the way you've been playing. So there you go, 2-0 at halftime, see you later.
And then the third kind of doesn't come as a huge surprise with the way we've been defending, it's kind of more of the same.
We're completely caught out again. Fullbacks right up, obviously chasing the game. The scenario is slightly different. And it was almost Smith Rowe's goal was almost a carbon copy of what Grealish did against Liverpool in that 7-2, where he's free on goal. And actually, the finish isn't that great, but it gets a deflection. And it's just one of those momentum things, isn't it? It's exactly.
Yeah.
You know, when Grealish just pulls the trigger, it's almost like he could, against Liverpool, it's almost like I could just hit it anywhere, it's going to go in. And that was pretty much what was happening there. It will find a way into the net because you've got that momentum.
Unfortunately, and it's another shambolic piece of defending where if McGinn tracks his man, he's almost like passed him up, past Smith Rowe over to Mings. Mings has done what he can. He's got a block in. And 9 times out of 10, maybe that goes out for a corner. But because of the way Villa are playing, of course, it ends up going in off the post. And you ain't going to get breaks when you're playing the way Villa are at the moment. You're just not.
Yeah, I was talking about McGinn in Match Club and some fundamental passes in this game he just broke us, broke our momentum down or our attempts to get some kind of momentum with when we're in a decent position, just careless passes. And, one of them led to one of their goals. And I was saying about McGinn, he does things that he looks like at times an 8, 9 out of 10 player, but at the same time, he does things that just make him a liability at times. And you're thinking, why, he's holding back this midfield, but it's like a Dr. Jekyll and Hyde situation, and it's a hard one. Is he doing enough where you say, yeah, he's one of the first names on the team sheet?
I think he is to Smith.
Or do you need somebody who's actually got a more rounded game? Because, his mistakes cost us, but at the same time, he potentially can, help win games. And, you know, we've got a midfield that needs some character, and he does provide that. So it's kind of a two-sided coin with him at times.
You just have to, say that the upside is worth some of the downside, and you have to kind of prop that up with other players. You know, if you've got Douglas Luiz playing next to him who's in good form, Douglas Luiz gives you that control of the ball, or maybe a Buendia or whoever it's going to be who comes in to play alongside him in a three, or even sort of Ramsey on a good day gives you a little bit of that.
Yeah, because it's funny, because McGinn can play. I mean, some of his passing, some of it's cultured, some of it's top draw, but then it comes to simple passes and he can really, fluff it in spectacular fashion.
He must be incredibly frustrating to play with. I mean, if he's that frustrating to watch, I mean, Mings had a go at him after that corner, and you can just imagine, if somebody that can do the things that McGinn can do so well, and then 5-yard pass, 10-yard pass, he's either hitting it out or he's not putting enough on it. You're just
giving it directly to them,
Yeah, just frustrating.
Positives.
Good strike from Ramsey at the end.
Yeah, and what's the word? Give me an adjective to describe that. Sweeps it in.
Casually. It's a beautiful goal and great, some really good approach play actually as well. Obviously, Bailey came off the bench, made a difference. I think the change of shape made a difference.
Well, something like
the big takeaways for the fans, I think, that the 3-5-2 isn't working. All of a sudden, you go to 4-3-3, and all of a sudden, in the second half, albeit the game's lost, but you do look a better side.
Yeah, I think Ramsey was, Bailey was like, had the ball, he was kind of, dribbling, going at them, blah, 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 and just kept going. And then, Ramsey said, look, mate, the time's running out. We need to get on with this. So I'm just going to sweep this one in the top-hand corner and we'll go again.
Yeah, and then after that, of course, you've got the Watkins chance, haven't you,
That was key. Sorry, were you going to say something, Phil?
No, I was just going to say that was going back to what you said about Ramsey against Everton. It's where he doesn't just go forward to put the ball in the net. He's trying to score the perfect goal. Well, I mean, he couldn't have placed that one any more perfectly.
Yeah,
that's a great strike.
That's in his nature. That's where he's aiming for. He did have a left-footed one, which we'll not talk about afterwards, which was another shocker, but... Yeah. Well, he's off the mark and running now. That's the only.
Yeah, that was important in terms of his progress and making him a contender, because it's still that midfield three is still up for grabs, because the Sanson is joining the race as well. Ramsey needed to get some end product, and goal was always going to give him confidence, because this is still undecided. I think that midfield lineup.
Yeah, I agree.
I mean, at the moment, probably Luiz is. A front runner. McGinn, you got to give him a pass at the moment to be a starter. So we'll see. I mean, just Ramsey, for somebody who's quite good on the ball, he needs to get on it a bit more. It's another game, although he came on as a sub. 12 touches in 23 minutes. And for a team chasing the game, it wasn't that spectacular. But also Ings, again, frozen out largely in terms of touches. 21 before he was hooked.
Yeah, the whole back three in a front two sort of experiment is starting to stink a bit of square pegs round holes, isn't it?
Well,
and accommodating players.
It works if you can retain the ball, but
yeah, we can't.
The amount of times we were giving it away, it doesn't allow you to justify having fullbacks so high up, because if you're giving the ball away so cheaply, you're going to get caught out, and that's how Arsenal pretty much got us. I mean, there's two problems: defending set pieces and just giving the ball away in cheap places when the fullbacks have got up the pitch, and then suddenly we're exposed on the counter.
Yes, and we're not making the tactical fouls in the halfway line again. I mean, if you look at the foul count again, Arsenal 17 fouls, Villa 10, and then going down to the yellow cards as well. Villa managed to get 5 yellow cards from those 10 fouls. I think one of them, Douglas Luiz's, was for dissent, for bouncing the ball back to Martinez when the referee wouldn't let him take it quick. But the other one, I mean, it's not only did Villa not tackle enough, they tackle badly when they do it.
Yeah, I mean, to be honest, at the start, it was looking a bit like we were going to get a red at some point. Mm. So I suppose that's a positive that we didn't.
the whole game, really, it kind of, I know there was an interview with McGinn before the game, talking about how, we can't let the Wolves game affect us, but it it looked like in the first half they did have a hangover from that sort of lack of confidence, a certain tentativeness. And then when they weren't tentative, they'd go the opposite way and they'd sort of overcommit and try a bit too hard to sort of force it. And there's almost a lot of it, I wonder if it's just in their head, a lot of it. We spoke earlier about the fact, you know, we're like a set piece coast and all these like minute details. It feels like Villa are almost just overthinking this a bit too much.
Yeah.
And, you know, the back four and the keeper worked last year. Why are we trying to, like, fix things that didn't need fixing?
There was an example. We got a free kick later on when we're chasing the game. And McGinn and Louise were, like, talking, eyeing it up. And it was from the left-hand side. And the commentator said, why are they overcomplicating this? They're two goals down. Just get it in a good area. And they were talking about it, and one of them went up to take it and, stopped, wasn't happy with his run. Arsenal, their back line pushed up and left us offside, so he went back to take it again, and it went straight to the keeper. And he's just thinking, what the fuck are you doing? Trying to come up with some bullshit here. Just get it in.
Yeah, it needs to go back. I mean, it's not even put it in the mixer. It's put it in an area. Put it in an area where the goalkeeper can't get it and where your forwards have, or whoever's attacking it hasn't a chance to get in the end of it. Just keep it away from the keeper, put it in with a bit of pace. I mean, it's not rocket science.
No, but it's like you can almost hear their brains whirling. It's a bit like NFL. It's like, oh, what play have we been told to do in this position? It's like it's not coming naturally, and it seems to be stagnating them. Because it's almost like something's wrong with that team. You don't recognise it. That defence is all over the fucking shop. It's because I think they've got instructions to do things in a new formation, and then there's the set piece ideas and perhaps are overcomplicated. Because how can you go from like rock solid 15 clean sheets to, I mean, that is as poor as you'll see. I mean, Villa over the years we've seen some shocking defending, like really shocking. It always used to be the main feature of the podcast, and this is up there with the worst of it.
Yeah, it's up there with, you know, Watford on the first day of the season and some of the garbage in that first year back in the league. You know, your Leicester away, a couple of Watford aways, in fact, we'll mention. Yeah. The Man City 6-1, just, you know, really bad decision-making, big players not stepping up to the plate. I don't know if it's a system thing. I think there's a little bit of that. I also think there's just guys just not doing their jobs.
Funny enough, we talked about that, the Leicester 2-0 under Sherwood. I remember on the podcast saying this pre-season feels like we need, because we got so many new players in, this is the season we got relegated, that we needed at least two more weeks of pre-season, because there's no way any manager could bed this down. And, you know, I said this at the start of the season, Smith could have done with an extra 2 weeks here, because some of these new boys haven't had chance, you know, the COVID situation, the outbreak, then some of these new players didn't have chance to actually bed in. Bailey hasn't started yet. And this is disruption, which does not help a season when you've actually got potentially five players that were key to a match day squad. So it is new. Ashley Young, Tuanzebe included to the big three that we bought. And that does not have you striding into the season on firm footing. And we actually still haven't found that firm footing. And I'm hoping there's no other injuries. You've got an international break, and then we've really got to be on it after that.
It's a big run of games.
Three games in November, which are there to pick up points in. I think Southampton, Palace, who else is it?
Brighton in there as
Brighton.
Well.
Yeah, Brighton. So those, you're looking at them now and you're thinking these games could go either way, but you really need to be picking up points because you've got seven games in December, and some of those, you know, it's Manchester City, it's Liverpool, Leicester. It could get ugly very quickly if they don't get a decent haul of points in November.
Yeah, but we've been here before waiting for the easy games in December, and it didn't pan out in the first season back.
Yeah, there isn't any easy games this time.
I mean, to use a phrase I haven't had to use, frankly, for a while, but it's time Villa need to get their shit together again. You know, I think, as you said, we said it before the start of the season, you know, because of all the transition and the disruption, injuries, COVID, etc., there's been a long list of mitigating circumstances. We still don't know what our best team is, our best shape is. It's probably the first time Smith's had 7 days to work with his squad who are either fit or in the country ahead of West Ham. So we might get a look, you know, ahead of the West Ham game in terms of, right, well, this is clearly the team and the formation Smith now wants to play.
The only concern is if it's not addressed, then, you know, the picture could get worse. And, you know, that is my only concern. Meanwhile, on your social media, it's like...
It's meltdown.
Oh, fucking, I mean, there's two worlds. There's the people that go to games, but also, you know, the more let's say, rational fan who perhaps can't get to games but understands, you know, the kind of process of football and understands all those mitigating circumstances and, you know, cuts the manager and his coaching team some slack and, while frustrated, understands that perhaps all hasn't been well. And then there's the numpty online who are just waiting to just to get some reaction on social media, you know, loses one game, Smith, and it's like Smith out. Beats Manchester United, no mention of it. Next game, loss, Smith out. When you're at that Wolves game or whatever, nobody's talking about Smith out in the stands.
Nah, that's just it's just an implosion in the last 10 minutes, which you don't enjoy it. It's frustrating. You get angry, but it happens.
But your experience, we've been through far fucking worse. If it doesn't alter after all the mitigating circumstances are out of the way, then you have the conversation, you know, what's going on? Why is it going wrong?
Yeah. I think there's the sort of a bigger underlying issue at the moment is this thing, and it's always been a problem at Villa, has been the disparity between expectation and reality. You know, people know the mitigating circumstances. They know they've brought in these players, but of course people only see numbers. So it's like, well, we've spent X, therefore we should be there. And it's like, well, it doesn't work like that. People saying we should be a top six side. Well, I'd say, well, why should we be a top six side when you look at last year's, say, the top eight? And I ask people, and I've had this conversation two or three times this week with different people, and I'd say, well, who are we currently better than from last year's top eight? I would say no one. Not really. We've shown signs of it. There's little shoots developing. You think actually Villa have got bits of being a good team, the United game, little moments, the 20 minutes against Everton, etc. You think, yeah, we've got the makings of a good side, but it's going to be clunky. We're going to be inconsistent. You probably can't judge us till sort of the second half of the season anyway. But we have got no divine right to be a top six side just based on our net spend.
If you want to take the basis of we've spent 100 million, we should be better than last season, you think, well, fair enough, but that 100 million hasn't actually played.
Yeah.
Bailey hasn't started. Buendia has been in and out and injured and away on that silly international
and
break.
Ings hasn't, actually, his output's not been too bad.
Ings is running around, but he hasn't got, you know, any providers really around him, and there's no cohesion in our forward play.
We've certainly not built a team to get the best out of him yet.
So why I agree, yeah, he should be improving if you've dropped 100 million. If that 100 million is not on the pitch, that's why it's frustrating, because you're not actually seeing it in play. But I understand the frustration, because you're thinking, yeah, okay, you know, the first few games, we were so under strength, you know, one in that Brentford game, we were missing half the team when the McGinn and his COVID and Ramsey added to that. And that's when you're getting frustrated, because you just want to see the full team play. And then you get to the point where we're now like a quarter of the season in and we still haven't seen it.
Yeah.
It's like, that's why people are probably pulling that Smith out trigger, which is still ridiculous. I mean, Jesus Christ. I remember Everton when Moyes was in his pomp. He used to do alternate seasons, Moyes. He would be challenging top four, finishing fifth or whatever, getting into Europe. The next season he'd be battling relegation. Next season he'd be back in the top five. Next season battling relegation again. I mean, how would that work out with this trigger happy thing? If they axed him when they were battling relegation, there's no way they would have finished top four, top five the season after.
And I think there has to be a difference between goals and expectation. Like, would we like to be top six? Yes. Do we actually expect to be, like, what is the bare minimum for this side? I would say the bare minimum is probably top 10 this season. But as long as you crack the top 10, that's progress.
Well, I mean, I have expectations for this team. They and the club do as well. They are looking for Europe. So it's not like we are not sitting here content with where we are.
13th.
Being content with, as long as we improve on last season, that's not where I'm coming from.
As long as we don't go down.
I'm coming from, we should be fucking challenging the European places this season. That said, I'm looking at it frustratedly, going, we haven't had a fair crack of the whip in terms of having, first of all, the 100 mil you've spent. That hasn't been in the situation. Has that helped influence this 3-5-2 system to create an effective, hopefully what was going to be an effective system to compensate for the loss of those players? Maybe there's a bit of that, as I've said before. But why get Axel and Ings in if you had no intentions of playing a front two, I mean, it seems that Ings was brought in to play. Obviously, Watkins had a good season last season in the England squad as well, so he's going to play. So that suggests there was grand designs to play a front two or have those two start in whatever formation. And then Axel, why would he come to Villa to sit on the bench behind Konsa and Mings with very little expectation of playing, unless he's been sold the scenario that we will be, at least for several games this season, playing a back three, so he will get game time. So that's something that Smith has got to sort out. As you said, we don't know our best formation yet or the best lineup.
Yeah, so bearing in mind, there's guys that actually have been probably slightly overlooked that actually had pretty good numbers last season. You look at guys like El Ghazi, who he's not everyone's cup of tea, but in terms of end product, which is frankly what we're asking for at the moment, goals and assists from your forward players, his stats last season speak for themselves. Traore the same.
Yeah, then you've got people on social media going, oh, attacking Smith, saying, oh, Buendia, he's a right winger. He's played all his games for Norwich right wing.
When?
Have a look at
any compilation. There's multiple compilations. Everything he does is through the middle of the park.
There's one on Sky, the best of Buendia. He's coming off on the left. He's coming off, but he's mainly going through the middle. His left foot is fantastic.
He's both-footed.
Yeah, and that is a fucking fallacy. Yeah, he's played there, but he's played everywhere else. And I have no problem as Buendia as attacking midfield. That's his position, centrally, wherever.
I have more problem with him as a winger, frankly, because he's not quick enough.
Yeah.
When you've got Bailey, you've got El Ghazi, who's not slow, Trezeguet, who's not slow, Traore, who can beat a man. It's like, why would you have four specialist wide players and play a central midfielder? That's just square pegs round holes.
But to bin Buendia would be ridiculous because he is very much the future.
And he was your first guy through the door in the summer. It was clearly one of your prime targets.
Yeah.
You wouldn't go and drop that amount of money on a player, especially a player from the Championship, if you didn't think we're bringing him in here to, I'm not going to say build a team around him, but he's clearly, they see him as being a relatively integral, cog in the machine.
Yeah, and was that price ridiculous? Yes, any player, 30 Clearly. Million, to me is ridiculous. It's a massive gamble because from the point of view that it lifts the expectations by a mile. If you get Buendia for 5 million, it's like you can cut him some slack.
Even 10, 15, you think, fair enough.
Yeah.
Carlos Hill, inflation, Buendia. I didn't think inflation was just that bad yet.
I just think the combination, be it system, personnel, whatever, it's just not working at the moment, and they've got to get it to work.
Yeah, and we've mentioned before, even in the early games, there was nice little passages of play, link ups, and whatever. And we haven't seen any of that. It's like the ball is now a hot potato, and we've been so sloppy and careless right across the board, from defending to keeping the ball, and McGinn being an example in terms of just sloppy passing. Anyway, we'll end on when we get beat, and it's getting more frequent this season. We line the players up, the first 11, and feel like we need machine gun this time, but
it's just spray and pray, ain't it?
What's the punishment this week?
Who has to do the tweet to the supporters after the game?
Yeah, and only one player's allowed to. Yeah, we go again tweet.
Yeah, everybody knows the token gesture tweets, which the club normally, their PR department or marketing department says to the players, oh, can you put out a tweet that says this or that? We go again, unlucky, thanks
tell
to the away
supports
fans.
How amazing they were.
So obviously they're going to cop some crap if they put out that tweet. So which player, they're only putting out one tweet this week, which player has to bear the brunt of it? Who's tweeting?
It's a tough one. I mean, there's no point in getting Twanziva to do it again because we picked on him last week. But I think I'm going to have to go with McGinn because just the drop from the heights of his performance against Wolves to the depths of that one against Arsenal, it's too big a drop. He needs to find a middle ground.
Yeah, there's so many candidates here. I mean, I could think of being Konsa in limbo. Target, I might go Target because Target's too far up. The way he didn't track back to get ahead of Saka or just impinge Saka for that Saka chance. I mean, that started halfway in the line. So I'm going Target. Target's getting a lot of... He did influence that game again, like he did the last two, by getting the deflected winners for the opposition. This time it was giving away that penalty, which was the key moment that game was lost. So I'm going target again. He's costing us games. So this is a concern now. Never mind bloody Smith out or any other nonsense. It's target costing us games with poor defending, which was not something you could say about him last season because his defending and it improved massively. I mean, to the extent that I was saying he was the most improved player across the season.
And actually, he very quietly went about his business last season. Now you're kind of noticing him every game now, but not for the right reasons.
It's desperation.
So who are you going for, Chris?
I'm actually going to go with, in a performance like that, when it's so bad of the team, I'm just going to say, well, the captain has to front up. The captain has to take that one on the chin.
So you go Mings.
I'm going Mings.
Those are the three candidates. Mings always tweets, though. I think we're going to have to get the gun out. So who's getting shot? I think Target, last time he tweeted was against Manchester United, so he only tweets when he's winning.
Oh, Chestnut.
But I don't think the punishment fits the crime. I think let's have the punishment. Who's going to the glue factory? It's about time the glue factory came back in. So who's the candidates? It's Target, Mings, or McGinn. My case is on Target. That is the third game that he's dealt us the killer blow.
There you go. Done, yep. Hat-trick.
That's the killer blow. I mean, come on.
You've talked us around because... It's putting him out of his misery. It's not really anything else because he just looks desperate out there. He's desperate to impress, desperate to do everything, and that's what's affecting his game so badly.
Would you bring in Ashley Young next game? But you got no choice because Target's down the glue factory.
No, would you not just do the Everton thing, play Bailey again down the left? Yeah. Shuffle everyone along one.
I don't know quite how I feel about starting Bailey as a wing back though.
Yeah.
Well, scare West Ham.
Young in a back four. With Bailey in front of him, I have no problem with that. I think we've got to get on the front foot now, so we shall see. Right, let's move on. Oh, one last stat of the game.
Just on the running theme, Aston Villa have fewer points after 9 games than they did in their first season back in the Premier League, and we all know how that ended. We had to wait until the final day, so hopefully it's not as bad as that.
Well, I think we'll find out in November for sure. Right, I just want to say...
Away days are great, but there's nothing quite like playing at home. The same goes for McDonald's. Maximise your home ground advantage with McDelivery. Order now on the McDonald's app. At participating restaurants, 18 plus, serving times, delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
A big thank you, as usual, to the My Old Man Said patrons. Thank you very much. Also to Andy Chance, who signed up this week. Please do go to myoldmansaid.com and click on the Patreon link to get more details to join us in Match Club, which yet again was a therapy session for the Arsenal game. And also get access to extra podcasts, which we will get out before the West Ham game, the My Old Man Saw one, so we can actually talk about something that's not Villa. But yeah, go to that link and check it out. Also, do follow the podcast on whatever app you listen to, because sometimes... when I finally edit the show, I put it out in the middle of the night. So, and I don't do social media at that time. I just want to go to bed. So sometimes it's the best way to wake up and have a notification that there is a new show available for your morning. So, whatever app you listen to, just follow on that. Also, follow us. You'll see in the show notes links to the Mad Few group and Facebook, which is dedicated to the show. And also you can follow us on Twitter at My Old Man Said. If you want to send me a few Ethereum coins, the wallet address is myoldmansaid.eth. Right, let's get out of here. Any final words? Very quick words.
Just calm the fuck down.
Who? Me?
Everyone.
I'm chilled.
Calm down.
The defence.
Everyone. Just, team, on the field, off the field, just calm down.
Phil?
just batten down the hatches, just ride out the rough bit.
It's going to be a clunky winter, but it might be a great spring.
By the way, the word clunky is now banned. You said it about four times in the last show. Three.
Brilliant.
You need a thesaurus for Christmas.
A what?
Thesaurus.
A what? What's one of them?
Encyclopedia. Right. Until the 3 points at home to West Ham, it's goodbye from me and it's goodbye from them.
Goodbye.
Goodbye.
This podcast is proud to be part of the TalkSport Fan Network.
TalkSport. Powered by fans.